I am Elle Penelope, author of epic fantasy and paranormal romance, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes of an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Saturday, January 23rd, 2021, and this is episode 104 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. For some reason, saying the year 2021 sounds like the future, whereas 2020 didn't quite, but maybe it's just still really unfamiliar. I'm having a hard time with the 2021, y'all. This week's best thing is that the Earthsinger Chronicles novellas is now available as a collection on audiobook exclusively from Audible. The collection released this week, so it's the three novellas that come in between the main novels, Breath of Dust and Dawn, Hush of Storm and Sorrow, and Echoes of Ash and Tears. They're all available on ebook. The last one is available in the anthology, Under a Winter Sky. And now they are all together on audiobook. So if you are an audiobook listener and you have been waiting with bated breath to be able to listen to the audiobooks, to the novellas on audiobook, you can. I will release the all three as a collection together later on this spring. Right now, they're just, like I said, all individual. So yeah, that was really fun. I have not actually listened to them. But the same narrator who does the main novels, Allison Johnson, they got her to do the audiobook. So there's continuity among the entire Earthsinger Chronicles series, which I really like. I really appreciate that. And I think people who enjoy Allison, her performance is really wonderful. So that should be cool. Also, before I forget, because I have been forgetting, this is the last week of my podcast giveaway to celebrate the 100th episode. I am giving away a signed book of your choice, including Requiem of Silence, the ARC, when I get it. So you can sign up and enter the giveaway, lpenelope.com/podcast giveaway. That's all one word. The link is in the show notes. The contest ends January 31st, and I will announce the winner on the next show I record after that. So it'll probably be the February 8th show will be the when I announce the winner. So yeah. Make sure you enter if you're interested. In writing news, I got the past pages for Requiem of Silence, book 4 of the Earthsinger Chronicles. It comes out in August, and the past pages are the typeset pages. It's my last chance to look at it before it goes to the printer. I believe the version that the ARC is made of the version before I did the past pages. So, that's how it goes. But yeah, so I have a couple of weeks to do my final read through, make any last minute changes, fixes. It's been a while, a couple months since I've read the book, which is nice to have some space from it. So I will look at it again with fresh eyes, and hopefully I will still love it. In writing, what I'm working on now is the 1920s fantasy heist story. I have almost 30,000 words written. It turns out that my plan for the week was entirely too aggressive, which I kind of suspected. I was trying to do 4 chapters this week. And every other week I've only done 3 chapters. So thinking I was going to do 4 magically was just folly. Should not have done that. So I readjusted my planning. And actually I got even less than 3. Yeah, I was trying to get 10 through 13 done, and I really just got chapter 10 done so far. Although I think I count till Sunday. So by Sunday, I think I should have a good part of 11 done. 10 took a lot longer than I thought because I forgot there are 2 scenes in 10. And one scene, the second scene, is only 1,500 words, but it took me like 2 hours to revise. Some of that was a little bit of research that was involved, but some of it was just the writing. It was actually, I had a fast draft of the scene. And I knew where it was going, and it wasn't actually bad, but I was making decisions, like, as I was writing it. So it's one of those things where, you know, I did the fast draft of the whole book, and I knew some things, but then after that, I realized I didn't know some other things. So I was deciding, and I was looking at my notes, and then I was trying to figure out, okay, where did this character come from? What is his backstory? Because I'd been sort of going between 2 different possibilities for this backstory, and the scene, you know, in the scene, I had to figure out which one it was and what the motivation was. And that was really going to carry me through the rest of this character storyline. It took a lot of time and then threw my schedule off, which happens. I think when I did the schedule I wasn't clear on the fact that there were two scenes, or else I would have given myself an extra day. I would have tried to do four chapters this week. I didn't even get through the three, so it's fine. I actually really like the scene that took forever to write, so it's worth it. It just means that probably I just have to push things back, because I don't think I'm going to be able to make up any time in the revision process. I'm not on a hard deadline right now. I have my own goals for when I want to see this thing done, and I can push it back. It's fine. It needs to be pushed back. I have been actually cutting scenes as I go. Like, I'll look through my outline and I'll be like, oh, I don't need that. So I've cut at least two or three scenes, which I think is how I've been able to stay on schedule mostly up until this point. I might in the future need to add some scenes, which will push me back even further. So I think I should just give myself more padding. The schedule I have right now has zero padding. And part of that is just because I don't have a hard deadline, and I can just, I'm kind of experimenting and seeing what works. And so I will have to allow myself to be more flexible. It feels like I don't like it, but it's necessary. And it's part of being kind to myself. I saw a headline of an article that I actually didn't read the article, but it said that self-compassion is more important than self-confidence. And I'll see if I can Google that and find it and maybe read it before I put it in the show notes. But that seems just logically to make a lot of sense. Like, I'm confident about my writing, but am I compassionate enough with myself when it comes to things like this? And I think there's always more room for self-compassion. And just a really important part of self-care. Also, a fun detail in my writing, a real historical, I had the phrase off the radar that I had in my fast draft. And I think it was like, they're trying to stay off the radar, you know? And then I was revising and I was like, when was radar created? I looked it up. Radar wasn't really used until World War II. This is a 1925 story. So I had to find another phrase for off the radar. And I'm sure there's going to be things like that slip through the cracks. Like, I'm trying right now just to make sure that my wording and my, you know, the etymology of the word matches the time as much as possible. There have been a few cases when I consciously have done something slightly anachronistic, and I'm keeping a record of them so that I can either put it in an author's note or at least, you know, tell the copy editor if they flag me on it. I have a separate little file in my Scrivener document for this, for known inaccuracies. Like, some things don't happen until in the real world, until 1927 or 1928, but I really want to use them in 1925 in my story. I found out that they go to a movie, and the movie's was not released until November, but this is taking place in August. Things like that, which are small details that I don't really expect anybody to pick up on, but I do want to make note of them, because I really wanted to use that movie, and the actor in that movie, it's recognizable, you know, and it just fit. So I just made a note of it, and I'm like, this might not actually have happened for a few months or a few years, but it works for the story, and that's part of being flexible for me. Because I know that there are going to be other inaccuracies that I have no idea about. I'm not a professional historian. I have done a few months of research, and I'm sure I could do many months or years more. And there are many, many people out there with more knowledge of the time period and of the details than I have. And some of them might read the book and might point out some things. So that's fine. You know, you do have to take some level of creative license. And really, I'm trying to be as accurate as possible, given my resources and time. And some of it is, you know, during COVID, there's some research that I just can't do. You know, I would potentially go places or go to the Library of Congress and look at some documents, or, you know, it's a lot of people travel for research. Like, that's not an option right now. So even though I'm writing about DC, but there's documents that I found that I wish I could read, but I can't access right now. So I'm just going to do the best that I can and hope for the best. And even though I am not even halfway through with this manuscript yet, I am already thinking about what comes next. It is important to stay focused on the manuscript, which I totally am, and I'm still enjoying it. But as you get through getting into the middle, you know, like, 30,000 words, and I think this is going to be an 85, 80 to 85,000 word novel. And the middle can be difficult. The middle of any novel is difficult. And sometimes you distract yourself with new shiny objects. Like, what am I going to do after I'm finished with this? Let me imagine that. And then there's also like just business concerns. And so part of me thinking about that is it helps to get through this and, you know, that slight distraction. And part of it is opportunities that come up that I have to think about and figure out, is that going to be the thing that happens next? What do I want to have to happen next? I have all of these unfinished manuscripts that I really want to finish. But sometimes, and I've talked about this before, you have to let things go. I'm very bad at that. I'm very bad at letting things go. Because a lot of these manuscripts I've worked really hard on, and I've worked on over a long period of time, like coming back to them and coming back to them over and over again, and never really being able to get them done. You know, I really do want to get them done, but there might be other things that would make more sense business-wise and even creatively. Like when you bang your head against a wall on something for a few years, even if it's off and on for a few years, A, I want to conquer it. Like I don't want it to defeat me. But B, maybe I need to let it go. And I don't know. I don't know when you make that determination. And they're always there. Like the possibility is always there that I will go back to them and finish them. And I should count them, but at least three to five unfinished manuscripts, possibly more. And in various stages, like some are full drafts that people have read. There are at least two full drafts of things that people have read that just aren't ready yet. Need a whole rewrite, both of them. I mean, anything that I would go back to, I've discovered, would need to be started from scratch. And that's daunting. And so if I'm going to start from scratch, I might as well start something new from scratch. It doesn't have that sort of emotional weight behind it of it beating me. But I don't like to admit defeat. So new opportunities that I'm thinking about. A couple of new things have come up. And it's really about how do I determine what, if any, or both, I will want to pursue and what that means time-wise and schedule-wise and creatively. And those are difficult decisions to make because, you know, writers are artists and business people and publishing is the business. And to a certain degree, if you want to be a professional and make money at it and make enough money to live on, you have to sort of feed the beast. And feeding the beast means giving it what it wants. But the question is, how do you give it what it wants while it's still being what you want to do? Because if I'm going to spend at least 6 months, nothing is going to take me less than 6 months to write from start to finish, from conception to finished product. So if I'm going to commit that sort of time to it, yes, I do want to make money at it. I'm a professional and I understand that it's a marketplace and to the best of my ability, I would like to write something that the marketplace wants. You know, I'm not so into my artistry that I'm an artiste and, you know, nothing about the market is going to influence my creative decisions. I don't. I'm much more practical than that. I talked last week about the indie game and the traditional publishing game. I'm not built necessarily for the indie game. And a little bit of what I mean by that is, you know, the rapid release schedule to make really good money as an indie, you really need to release quickly. You need to write to market, study the market, see what is selling, what the bestsellers are, what are the tropes, what's the structure of the things that people want to read. Give the people what they want and give it to them quickly. And by and large, I'm not interested in that. Which is not to say that I'm not interested in trying to write something that people will want to read, because I am. And it's like, it's about aligning that with what I want to say and the other things that I talk about a lot, which is what I want to put out into the world. And how can I find something that is the Venn diagram of those two things, you know, the intersection. There are times when people come to you with ideas or with opportunities or with sparks of something and like, this might be a good fit for you. We think this can sell. We think this is a good business opportunity. Are you interested in doing that? And so that's kind of where I am with a couple of things. And I'm sort of in that brainstorming, fact-finding, or heart-searching also place where, okay, this is something that, you know, a potential opportunity. Is it something that is in my Venn diagram, you know, or how can I find a way for this to be in my Venn diagram between things that will sell and things that I want to put into the world? And sometimes that can be a really difficult proposition, you know. There are a lot of authors who are very, very busy, and especially authors of color, Black authors. I remember somewhere seeing Rebecca Roanhorse write about this or talk about this, and she has a crazy amount of projects, like in the pipeline coming out, adult, middle grade, fantasy, sci-fi. Like, I don't know how she's able to write all those books. Another podcast that I listen to, Deadline City, with Danielle Clayton and Zoraida Cordova, both of them are incredibly busy. Hearing them talk about multiple contracts, multiple deadlines, it makes my head spin. But I understand why they've taken all this on. I mean, I have other friends who are in multiple contracts. I'm like, can you write all of those books? When? How? How's that going to work? Now, all of those people are, I don't know about Rebecca Roanhorse. I'm assuming she's a full-time author now, but they're full-time authors and I'm not full-time. So I have to weigh running a business and all of these other things. So I don't have the amount of time that these other people have when they're juggling 3 and 4 contracts and different books for different, not just different publishers, but different, you know, age groups, middle grade, YA, adult, doing all the things. I can't do all the things. That's part of self-compassion, knowing that I can't do all the things. And I'm not even going to try to do all the things because I'm tired. But what can I do? And so coming back to, you know, being a Black author and having opportunities, feeling that you can't say no sometimes, or feeling like you don't want to say no because that opportunity might not come around, you know, or this is a great thing that could open doors. If I do well, you know, you open the door for other people doing well to open the door for me. That kind of runs through your mind. Having a difficulty saying no in general, like, I'm honored that people would come to me and say, we think this is something that you could do. We think this is a good fit for you. Someone has recommended you for something, or, you know, someone has spoken highly of you and we want to work with you. And that's like, oh my goodness. I mean, part of me just wants to be like, yes, thank you. Anything, you know, but that's not reasonable either. So yeah, it comes down to taking all of these things into consideration and just being compassionate to myself and knowing, we're trying to figure out what is going to push me and make me grow. What is a good challenge that I would like to have? How can I take the stories that I want to write and the stories that are meaningful to me and the stories that I want to read and fit them into a commercial package that other people will want to read? And that's sort of the calculus that goes on, that is going on in my mind right now as I'm thinking about these things and brainstorming ideas. And, you know, just kind of thinking about what is going to happen next. What happens after I finish this book? What will my next project be? And yeah, so it's going to be an ongoing process. A lot of it is talking with other people, whether it's like my creative partners, my mastermind group, people who know what I want to do, and brainstorming with them, with my agent, and also talking about, you know, my career, like what, how do these things impact sort of my overall career, my body of work? When I first started working with my agent, Sarah Megabo, I remember talking to her about sort of these things. Like, as I was thinking about initially what I was going to work on after Earthsinger Chronicles, was I going to do something YA? We talked about middle grade, things that were selling. Could I do that? And I had a lot of questions about how does this affect like my brand, especially in the indie world, you think a lot about branding and your name, in terms of when people search for you on Amazon, you want similar things to pop up. You're also bots, which kind of are going away. Although I still see also bots, but you want the same things in your also bots. So you don't want to publish under the same name in different genres. That is a common thing. Now, plenty of people do it and don't worry about it. And in traditional publishing is definitely less of a concern than in indie. But you also have to take into consideration, what does your audience want from you? Now, I poll my newsletter. I try to do it every year. I think I've probably missed a year. But in the past, when I've polled them and asking a question like, what would you like to see me write? A lot of people are just like, write whatever you want to write. We'll read it. And I take that to heart, you know? as much as I think about what does my audience expect from me and want from me, it's a very tiny consideration, because if I'm, and that's part of another reason why I'm not as interested in the indie game, because to a certain degree, I feel like indie authors, especially high earning indie authors, are incredibly at the mercy of their audience in a non-judgmentally, you know, like the audience is buying the books and is creating their career and their income. And that's, you feed that, you know, but sometimes I know that they feel boxed in. Like if they stray too far away from the thing that the audience wants to a thing that maybe they want to do more and the audience doesn't follow them, they have to go back and go back to that thing that is feeding the income. And maybe if you, if your brand is a little bit more, diverse initially, your audience doesn't get too locked into the same thing. You can avoid that. And maybe just being traditional allows you to avoid it because you're less beholden to what I want from you is, wolf shifter bromance. Give me bears. I don't want to read bears. I want wolves. You know, some audiences are that narrow. Now, I mean, I think that's kind of, hyperbolic because wolves and bear shifters are not going to be that big a deal. But if you're giving them wolf shifters and then you want to switch to, you know, royal romance billionaires or something, maybe they don't follow. I mean, some will, some won't, but those are the kinds of details, the kinds of like sort of, narrow lanes that can be an issue. And for indie authors who want to go in that other lane, they're building a new audience who wants that other thing and that might not go to their wolf shifter romance. You know what I mean? And that kind of thing feels restrictive to me. And I do trust that, you know, there is a core audience who will read my voice and appreciate my voice in whatever I do. You know, that thing inside of me is always going to shine through. And so thinking through these questions and how do I, you know, get my Venn diagram together is really like, how do I stay true to myself and to my audience? Because whatever it is in my books, whether it's an epic fantasy or a contemporary paranormal romance, I see the connection. I see the themes that I'm dealing with and the characters and the similarities. And I think the people who follow me from genre to genre will see that too. And maybe that's the thing that they're attracted to, because I'm going to try to make sure I'm always bringing that to the table. And I feel like I can't help but always bring that to the table. And so, you know, part of this calculus is like how to make sure that I'm protecting that and not letting business, marketing, the market, writing to market to the extent that you do in traditional, sort of corrupt that and protecting my reason for doing it, or my, I don't even know what the word is for that, you know. Hopefully that wasn't too long and drawn out. Obviously I'm still working out in my head and I don't have any answers yet, but one of those things that you deal with in the life of an author. In recommendations, I finally started watching Star Trek Discovery. One of my friends has been after me for a long time, and I'm like, I refuse to add one more streaming service. You know, like, I've got Netflix, Amazon Prime, Hulu, Disney Plus, Peacock showed up. I mean, I don't pay for that, but like, I don't want anything else. I don't want CBS All Access. So I had been putting off, you know, watching Star Trek Discovery. And then a friend of mine sent me the Blu-rays of season one, and I was like, okay. So shout out to Michael. Thank you very much for sending me the Blu-rays. My husband and I binged the entire season one in a few days. And then, of course, I broke down and got CBS All Access. And now we're watching season two. Still on the free trial, though. I haven't paid for it yet, but obviously I'm going to pay for it. And I want to pay for it for as little time as possible, because it's just it's not a money thing, you know, it's like $6 or $7. I think I paid the commercial free one, which is like $10. It is the principle of the thing. Too many channels. I don't like, you know, that thing where you're like, oh, what are we going to watch? And then you spend the next hour scrolling through Netflix trying to figure out what you're going to watch. And then you double it, because sometimes I'll be like, well, what's on Amazon Prime? Well, what's on Hulu? No, then you don't watch anything at all, because you spent the entire time you were going to watch something trying to figure out what to watch. I'm trying to keep a list on my phone of things I want to watch so that, you know, when it comes time, you know, that time comes, I'm like, I have a list. We're going to get through this list before we spend our, waste our time scrolling through the menus. Anyway, Star Trek Discovery is amazing. It is really good writing, really thoughtful explorations. I'm not a super Trekkie, but, you know, I catch little things here and there, and my husband catches a lot more, even though he doesn't consider himself a Trekkie, but he knows a lot. I think it's mostly Deep Space Nine. Like, he watches Deep Space Nine, all of it, every couple of years. So yeah, obviously that's a great show. He thinks it's better than Battlestar Galactica and The Expanse. I feel like I'm not quite there yet. I mean, I think the first few seasons of Battlestar were just amazing. I mean, and it's been years since we've watched it, but. And then The Expanse, I how much I love The Expanse. I would put it up there with them. I don't think it surpasses them, but to each his own. We're also watching WandaVision. We just watched the third episode today. I don't know. I appreciate that they're doing something very different. You know, they're doing this whole retro sitcom thing, which is never seen before, you know, and really well. Like, Elizabeth Olsen is such an amazing actress. I only watch it because he watches it, and I'm curious as to how they're going to make this make sense, because after three episodes, I really would stop. I actually would have stopped after the first one, but I respect the innovation and the difference, and I appreciate the performances. One time when I was in LA, we had lunch next to Kathryn Hahn and her family. Anytime I visit my brother in LA, there's always obviously lots of star sightings, and I'm really good at spotting celebrities. Like, the rest of my family isn't. I saw Wilson Cruz. We saw him at something, at like a theater or something, one time when I was out in LA. Oh, the celebrity name dropping aside. Yeah, not so sure about WandaVision, but I'll keep watching. Also, a cool thing in the things that can happen to authors kind of column, ways that you can license your material. Fellow Maryland romance writer Christy Barth just had one of her books turned into a video game. Well, a video game. It's on your phone, a phone game. Anyway, it's like a choose your own adventure. Apparently they're taking a bunch of books and turning them into kind of choose your own adventure games. So the app is called Spotlight, and Christy's story is The Princess Problem. So you can choose, I started playing it last night. It's actually really, it's kind of cool. Like, you can choose your character, you get to design them, their hair, their eyes, their clothes. And then you step through the story, and then every once in a while you get to make a choice about what happens. I haven't yet figured out how to earn diamonds. Like, some choices cost diamonds, and aside from paying actual money for them, I assume there's a way you can earn them in the game, but I haven't gotten that far yet. But it's really cool, and the graphics are really great, and it just seems like a really fun thing to do. And so she talked about her experience licensing her work for the game in our last meeting. Basically, she didn't have to do anything, you know. She signed the contract and she cashed the check, and they just did everything. So that's another opportunity that can come to authors to have their story turned into a game. I will link to it if there's an iOS and an Android version. And yeah, check it out. I've gotten a little bit more into phone games. I've never been any kind of gamer. I never played like Candy Crush or Animal Crossing or any of those big games. I just haven't. But recently I've gotten into a game called June's Journey, which is a hidden object game. And that was really the only type of game I've ever played. When I met Marjorie Liu many years ago, author Marjorie Liu, I was like, I have your game. And she had licensed her books into a hidden object game. And this was just a computer game. Like, this must have been 2013. And I had played the game for a couple of years before that. And she was like, yeah, Leslie, you're like one of the only people who ever bought that game. And I was like, I love that game. It was from her paranormal romance series. The only game I really play is Solitaire and Mahjong. Like, I'm very old school. And inside of Solitaire, there was an ad for this hidden object game. And so I downloaded a few of them because a couple of them I didn't like. And I landed on June's Journey. And I've been playing it for the past couple of months. And I'm on a team. We have competitions. It's very serious. So I've been slowly getting into a couple of different types of phone games. I don't like that Candy Crush style thing. There's a couple of other games that I've seen on ads and I've tried them, and they're that, you know, match the shapes thing that I assume is what Candy Crush is. And every other one is like that. So apparently I only like hidden object games and choose your own adventure style interactive visual novel games. But I'm open to other things. I downloaded a jigsaw puzzle game on my phone. I'm branching out. So yeah, check that out. I will link to Christy's game in the show notes. Our featured podcast this week is Dateable, and here's a word from them.
Is monogamy dead? Are we expecting too much of Tinder? Do millennials even want to find love? The Dateable podcast, part of the Frolic Network, is an insider's look into modern dating that the Huffington Post calls one of the top 10 podcasts about love and sex. I'm your host, Yue Xu, former dating coach turned dating sociologist. You'll also hear from my co-host, Julie Kraftchik. On each episode, we'll talk to real daters about everything, from sex parties to sex droughts, date fails to diaper fetishes, and first moves to first loves. Tune in every Wednesday on your favorite podcast player as we explore this crazy dateable world.
So that's it for me for this week. I hope that you have a wonderful week. We managed to have a peaceful transition of power. Every time they would say that on the news, I would be like, I mean, yeah, but not really, but kind of. I mean, it ended up peaceful. Didn't start that way, but I guess the ends justify the means or something like that. Yeah, so we're in a new era. The shenanigans began almost immediately, of course. But now I can go back to ignoring politics in the news as usual, hopefully. And just voting every year or two, whenever it happens. I texted a friend, like, I feel like I've taken my first full breath in 4 years. So yes, let's make 2021, the future. Let's make it great. For episode show notes and to sign up for the Footnotes newsletter and get the show notes in your inbox, go to myimaginaryfriendsshow.com. You can also make sure you sign up for the contest at lpenelope.com/podcast giveaway. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, watch the video episodes on YouTube, and leave a rating or review to help support the show. My Imaginary Friends is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. For more fantastic podcasts, go to frolic.media/podcast.